The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Josh Pick is the Chief Investment Advisor with Aptus Wealth Management, a state-registered investment advisory firm. This program is sponsored by Aptus Wealth Management. Exposure to ideas and financial vehicles discussed should not be considered investment advice or recommendation to buy or sell financial vehicle. This information should not be considered tax or legal advice. Individuals should consult with professionals to see if any ideas expressed would fit their specific situation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Securities can fluctuate and when redeemed may be more or less than when originally invested.
Thank you for joining us on the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. I'm Bruce Hooley here with Josh Pick of Aptus Wealth Management. And for the next hour, we'll be talking you through some of the things that are going on in our economy right now, some of the things that you can focus on, think about, and take note of as it concerns growing your wealth. That's what they specialize in at Aptus Wealth Management. They're located in Lewis Center, just off Route 750, very easy to get to, just a little bit north of the 23-270 interchange. But fret not, if you're not from the Columbus area, you can have Josh and his team consult with you via remote hookup. They do it with a lot of their clients, so they're very easy to get a hold of. Set up your free consultation, 614-917-1040, or you can do it on the web at Aptus Wealth, A-P-T-U-S, aptuswealth.com. A lot of the concepts that we talk about today may jet right past you, but if you would like to hear more about them, you can go to Josh's YouTube channel, search Josh Pick Finance on YouTube, and you'll see these concepts boiled down into smaller doses where you can pause it, stop it, take notes, and learn about it more. But the best way to understand how these concepts and what we talk about today applies to you is to, of course, take advantage of that free consultation, 614-917-1040, or Aptus Wealth, A-P-T-U-S, aptuswealth.com. Josh, it's always great to see you. And when I was looking today, the jobs report is out, and it is supposedly, I would guess, good. I would think if you have more jobs added to the economy than the experts expect, I would think that's good. But I read that, yeah, but there's a bad part to it. And it feels to me like we've gotten in a fix, a pickle, a predicament with our economy, where even what should be good news has a poison pill with it, or even the good news is somewhat bad news.
It would almost lead you to believe that maybe someone somewhere wants to keep us separated from one another and hating one side versus the other, like maybe a political engine, right? But it certainly does seem that way. You know, no matter what information we're provided, one side of the aisle is saying it's a great deal. Mm-hmm. The other side is saying it's a terrible deal. They're ignoring all of this. And I think the only thing that you can do in times like these is recognize that the Fed, and we've talked about this for weeks and weeks and weeks, has backed themselves somewhat into a corner. And this isn't anything new. We oftentimes in my industry say that the Fed is usually lagging in what they need to do, because they kind of have to see what plays out before they act. And at that point, the ailment's already there and they're trying to cure it rather than inoculate it against it in the beginning. So here we are. And as a result, it's causing a whole bunch of tidal waves that aren't going to go anywhere anytime soon, unfortunately. And, you know, our economic forecast over the next year or two is more bumpy roads ahead. Now, that does not mean that I'm suggesting that everybody should run for the hills. But what I am suggesting is, if you're working with somebody currently, and you feel like, man, there's just something I should be doing, I feel like there's some way that I can gain control back of something, I don't want to watch this cart just go off the edge of the hill without any, at least any communication. And I think the important part is communication. If you don't believe in your plan, then you're not going to ride the wave through these difficult times. So if you feel like that, and your advisor hasn't called you in a while, maybe it's time to take a second look. And that may seem like a shameless plug, but unfortunately, in times like these, you'll see people, you know, turn into just burying their head into the sand, and they don't call any of their clients. And I think that's just a terrible way to do it. Call our office. We're not going to tell you that we're going to change everything, but we will tell you that there are ways that you can maybe limit those losses, control your liability a little bit, mitigate risk a little bit better while not taking the money off the table, so you can survive some of this nonsense that isn't going anywhere anytime soon.
Well, and I can speak to this from personal experience, and I will just tell all you guys listening to the show, my wife and I are now clients with Aptus Wealth Management. And I've known Josh for 2 years. Never in that time ever did he even ask me if I wanted to be a client, or, hey, here's what I can do for you, or hard sell me, or soft sell me, or gently nudge sell me. Never. But as we talked, and as I was more exposed to his philosophy on investing and some of his ideas and how knowledgeable he was about different options out there, Sherry and I have certainly, talked about it ourselves. We went in, met with Josh. We did the free consultation, and some of the things that he outlined as he got a look at our finances convinced us that we trust him and we want to put him in charge of our retirement. So I could just tell you that it's certainly something that I would tell you would be worth your time to have that free consultation with Josh and his team. And you're not paying me to say that. And I just thought I should offer that to lend some authenticity to this. So let me get back to what I mean by bad news is good news. So this jobs report, everybody wants a job, right? We need jobs. Jobs report comes out. We added more than they thought. Okay, that's great. No, it's not great, because now the Fed is going to read this supposedly as the economy's not slowing down to the extent that we want it to slow down. We've raised interest rates to slow the economy. People have heard this term soft landing. What they're trying to do, you've heard thread the needle. They're trying to slow the economy enough that prices gently fall and that demand gently falls and supply gently rises so the two meet each other. But these 75 basis point increases in the interest rate has affected home borrowing. You were getting a mortgage for 3%. Now you're getting a mortgage for 6%. The house you can afford becomes less house because your house payment goes up. So you would think, okay, they're raising rates to help the economy. That's a good thing. No, it's not a good thing, because now you can afford less house. So that's what I mean by the good news of the jobs means it's not slowing enough. That's the bad news. The good news, they're raising rates. No, that's the bad news. Everything's going up. And I guess when you spend a lot of money, and our government spent a lot of money to get us out of the pandemic, you spend a lot of money, you create a lot of problems, and these problems just aren't that easy to fix.
No, not at all. And I mean, on one hand, you say, please, Lord, slow down inflation.
Yeah.
Because inflation's at 8 point whatever%. So we need to slow that down. But clearly, as they're raising interest rates, the market doesn't like it, because the market's down 20%+ on the year.
Yeah. So it's down today.
And it's down again today. So great news. You're not going to lose as much money to inflation, but you're going to lose a whole bunch more money when you're invested in the stock market. So where do you want to lose it from? To inflation or to market decline?
Mm.
And, you know, I think that points back towards, and I always circle back towards the things that we can control. And I can't control what the Fed does. I can't control what the government's going to do. I can't control government spending other than my vote, just like you.
Yeah.
But what I can control is how I react to it. And I can control what my plan is. And unfortunately, if you look at the statistics and who has gotten involved in the stock market over the last 10 years, a vast majority of the new investors had never invested in the stock market ever before. The reason they got into the market over the last 10 years is because it's been a frenzy. The market's going nothing but up. We're getting free money. We're getting stimulus checks. Mm-hmm. What should I do with it? Well, I'm going to put it in the market. What should I do with it? Meme stocks. What should I do with it? This. What should I do with that? And unfortunately, as a result of that, I believe that it's going to cause somewhat of a secondary bubble. And by that, I mean, not only are we going to have a bubble in certain sectors, because that's just what happens in times like these, but then we're going to have this secondary bubble of what we call matriculation risk, which is nerd speak for a bunch of people leaving at the same time.
Right.
And you're going to have all these people that don't know that it takes time to actually win this game. They're going to go, well, money was real easy before. I was doing great. I was the best investor ever. And now I'm not. And they're all going to bail. And that could cause a secondary drop, which is why I don't think we're through the woods yet. And I'll give you an example of this, which I think is the purest form of how does one invest. I went over this with a client just earlier today. I said, who is the best investor? If I asked you, what comes to mind when you think of the best investor ever? Most people would think Warren
Peter
Buffett.
Peter Lynch, Warren Buffett, right. Somebody like that.
Okay, so Warren Buffett over the last, let's call it 56 years, from 1964 until 2021, has averaged 20.1%.
Wow.
That means, just to quantify how ridiculous that is, if you put $1,000 in his investment in Berkshire Hathaway in 1965, as of the end of last year, you now have over $36 million off of $1,000.
Wow.
So you did okay.
Yeah.
Okay. The S&P 500 only did half of that, roughly. And you'd say, well, I should have half as much then. I should have $18 million. No, actually, I'd have $300,000, because remember, we're talking about compound interest. Mm. So it's a difference of a lot, a hundredfold of money, right? So I tell you that to tell you this. If you don't believe in your plan, If you don't believe and you haven't established a knowledge base to understand what you're doing, if you don't believe that you're going to stay the course no matter what, I'm going to give you 3 years of his returns and compare him to the S&P 500. And you tell me, if you just were a fair weather investor, if you could hold on. So in 1974, the stock market went down 26%, and Warren Buffett went down 49% roughly. And then the following year, in 1975, the stock market went up 37%, and Warren Buffett went up 2.5%. You hanging around?
No, I'm out.
You're out, right? So you better believe in what you're doing, because the next part of the story is in 1976, the stock market did 23, and he did 130. So now he's back up. Mm-hmm. So if you think a long-term investor means 1 or 2 years, and you think that this year we've done all the analysis, we know what we're doing, and this is the right place for us to be, and after 6 months you go, nope, change it.
Yeah.
You lose. So the important part is, and we stress this over and over again on this show, and you know, you've heard me say it a million times, the plan, knowledge base, understand what you're doing and why. You'll never be able to thwart times like these. And unfortunately, Bruce, and what makes me kind of sad, is people who don't get proper advice will make illogical decisions. And if you missed just the 10 best days over a 20-year period, you cut your rates in half. And who ends up doing that? The people who get the worst advice, the people who are in the middle income category, the people who can't afford great advice. And those are the people that need it the most. And that just builds this disparity of wealth amongst the United States. So I implore everybody, please take more time than you do spending your, planning your vacation, or take more time than you do picking out your pair of shoes to focus on what am I going to do for the next 40 years of my life?
Well, I think there's so much wisdom on many levels to knowing what you believe and why you believe it. Also related to that, knowing what you're going to do, having a plan, and knowing why you're going to do it. The investments that you and I have worked out that are right for our family would not be perfect for my neighbor. They might be in a different situation. And I think we have a situation in our country, Josh, where we just feel like, well, my money needs to be in the market if I'm ever going to make gains. There are times that's true, but you can also be in the market with some of your money, and you can be other places with some of the rest of your money. And, you know, it's not a matter of just, is there one investment strategy that protects me from risk and exposes me to the best chance to gain? You're probably going to be taking too big of a risk to gain and too big of a risk to lose if you have all of it on one thing. But if you can move it, not just move it, but I mean, you know, fractionally invest it here and there. That's the thing that I think makes sense for someone to have a wealth expert, a growth expert, someone who has done this before, someone who knows. I mean, I'll be honest, folks, some of the options that Josh showed us, I wasn't even aware they existed. My wife wasn't aware they existed. We're stock market people. And sometimes what you don't know is can really be a big time problem for you. So that's why I advocate getting that free consultation at Aptus Wealth Management. Get a professional like Josh and his team helping you understand what's ahead and why you do what you do. 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040, or aptuswealth.com. Is there a gap between the perception and reality between the way that, you know, most of the people you encounter or most investors look at retirement? Is there a gap between what they think they know and what really is?
There's a huge gap. And there's been a lot of research done on this. I just saw a Forbes article that talked specifically on this. And it said, you know, how unrealistic are people's expectations versus the realities of where they are? And what's funny is even in the study it was contradictory. So on one hand, it says that the study shows that most of today's pre-retirees lack sufficient savings to fully retire at 65, and they have completely unrealistic expectations. Matter of fact, the majority surveyed reported having only a moderate retirement savings, which is about $128,000. So of the people that were surveyed, now nationwide, it's actually lower than that, but the median of the people surveyed was $128,000 of total savings.
That's what they have saved for retirement.
Total. But what's funny is then they turn around and say, in one of the questions of the survey, they say they're pretty darn comfortable that they're going to be okay when they retire. But then you go in further to the questions, and it says 1 out of 10 say that they're very comfortable regarding their overall finances. So on one hand, they're very comfortable that they're going to be just fine. And on the other hand, they feel 10% confidence. And then it goes on to say 6 out of 10 respondents feel that they should have done more planning than they did. They actually go on further to say that 3 out of 4 retirees say that they have planned more time on vacations throughout the years than they did on their retirement planning.
Yeah, I think that's probably very true.
That's an unfortunate piece. And then over half of the retirees believe that they're going to base their decisions on retirement based upon age as opposed to how much money they actually have. So they just believe that when I reach 65, I'm going to retire and everything will work out because that's when you retire. It doesn't matter how much money I have.
Well, that's what I wondered when you first started to talk about this, the gap between perception and reality. Is it a gap between what they think they need for retirement and what they actually need? Because if they have $128,000 saved, I don't know how you could think that would be sustainable if you're going to retire at 65, unless you plan on living till 67.
You know, without you know, hypothesizing or even being mean, the only thing I can come up with would be people just really don't have an education on what they're actually going to need. And they really haven't put any time into it. They just like to, they fall into two camps. And I think this is important with planning too, is oftentimes we think planning is so important for people who don't have enough money. But I deal with a lot of people who have more than enough money, but they still need planning because they don't think they have enough money. Mm. So there's two folks in general, and obviously there's shades of gray everywhere in between. But one is everything's going to work out no matter what I have. Mm-hmm. And the other camp is there's no way it's ever going to work out no matter what I have. Right. And on one hand, you can lend some kind of level of comfort to the people who have more than enough, but they don't believe it. And usually it's even worse because it's a husband and wife that believe the exact opposite.
Oh, wow.
So one person says, we're going to be fine. I don't know why this person always worries. And the other person says, you got to worry more because the other shoe's going to fall. The only way that you can conquer that gap, the only way, is not through arguing with your spouse. It's not through me. You know, it's like my kids won't listen to me, but I bring them in and have them talk to you, Bruce, and they'll listen to everything you say, right? Well, similarly, your spouse isn't necessarily going to think that you're about to educate them on the wisdoms of the world. Sometimes it takes a third party and a solid, process where it makes sense to both people and you can bring them back to the center. And the other thing that I hear all the time, and, you know, at first you would say, well, everybody says that all the time, is this time's different. It's harder now to retire with investments than it used to be. It's harder now. And you go, well, you know, history repeats itself. Is it really that hard, or are we just trying to turn an ant into an anthill? And the reality is it is harder. So I saw this other article.
Mm-hmm.
In 1995, if you wanted to get a 7.5% average annual rate of return, you could put all of your money in bonds.
1995, but all your money in bonds.
All your money in bonds, and your expected rate of return over the following two decades was 7.5%. Now, your risk level, remember in this show, we've talked a lot about standard deviation, which isn't necessarily a direct measure of risk, but it's a measure of volatility. The S&P 500 has a risk level of about 15, which means a 15 level, just think 15 is the level of bounce that the S&P 500 has. So this had a risk level of 6, standard deviation of 6. You're only taking about a third of the risk of the market.
Yeah.
Getting a 7.5% rate of return. Fast forward to 2005. Well, now you can see on this, the listeners obviously can't see it. Mm-hmm. The graph gets much more diversified. Now we need 50% in bonds, 20% in large cap stocks, 5% in small cap. You need some, you know, international, you need some private equity, you need all this stuff to achieve the same thing. And all of a sudden your standard deviation is 9. So you just picked up 30% more risk. Fast forward to 2015, because interest rates are where they are. And to get a 7.5% rate of return, you need to take on the same risk level, essentially, as the S&P 500. The only thing you're doing by diversifying is smoothing out the ride a little bit more. So what does that mean? If you don't, you had mentioned, you and Sherry came into my office, mm-hmm. and you said, oh, you exposed me some things that I didn't know really existed. If you don't look beyond the norm, you are accepting the traditional ride. But unfortunately, the traditional ride is not near as smooth as it was 20 or 30 years ago, simply because of the situation that our government has put us in with interest rates. It just is what it is. You don't fight it. You just learn how to pivot from it. And unfortunately, you correlate this all back, and people believe, unreasonably so, that a lot of times they have enough money. And then congruently with that, they take more risk than they need and make inadvertently bad decisions pulling out at the wrong time. And you have a time now where inflation is 8%, and the average investor only returns 3% because of bad decisions. You need help.
Yeah, that's bad. You're losing 5% a year on that. And you can set up your free consultation, go through the exact same process that my wife and I did with Josh and the Aptus team, 614-917-1040. You can do it on the web at aptuswealth.com, APTUS. You can listen to this show again tomorrow if some of the things that we've said have gone past you pretty quickly. It airs at 2 p.m., the replay on Saturdays. Tell your friends about it. Avail yourself of Josh's YouTube channel. Search Josh Pick Finance on YouTube. Yeah, what you were talking about with the visit to Cherry and I made dovetails with what you were saying about sometimes a wife believes one thing and a husband another. I know that she has viewed throughout the years investing as a little bit differently than I have. She thought our home was the best place that we could invest. Real estate was where to be. I really was intrigued by some of the options you presented here on this show a couple of weeks earlier. I wanted her to hear those options, and I didn't want to tell her, hey, we're going to do this. I wanted her to say, that sounds great, let's do it. And I think the best thing that came out of our consultation with you was that we gained peace of mind because we ended up on the same page through our own independent thinking, seeing the wisdom of what the options were that you could offer.
Yeah, and I hope that's always the case, right? And I appreciate all your kind words, by the way. But I hear that a lot throughout meetings, and ultimately that's the goal. It's interesting. We want to make things more complicated than they have to be. And I had a dinner last night with a good friend of mine who works in the business. He's in the industry. He's a so-called expert, right, that deals with people like me on a daily basis, but I've known him for 25 years. And I said, what's interesting is the media has convinced us so much that if I told you, Bruce, that I can guarantee that if you told me a money that you can save per month, you told me what that dollar amount is, and I can guarantee with 100% certainty that if you do that every month until the day you retire, you will have enough money for you and your wife, Sherry, to retire on for the rest of your life, adjusted for inflation, no matter how long you live, based upon all the numbers you gave me. Mm-hmm. So it's a guaranteed completing plan. You would say, yes, where do I sign? And then if I told you, well, unfortunately, Bruce, you're only going to earn 5% per year to get there, you'd go, ah, I'm not stupid. The market does better than that. I want to take on more risk. Oh, we just completed everything that you said you wanted to do with no risk. Why don't you want to do it? And that's what we've been programmed to think. And I'm not suggesting that we can't do better than 5%. All I'm saying here is I'm illustrating the unfortunate reality that we like to compare ourselves to others. And I think that is a really dangerous road to go down. And we can blame that on Facebook or Instagram or social media or whatever. But ultimately, we almost care more about beating the guy next to us than we do accomplishing our own goals. And unfortunately, if you keep on chasing the road down to zero doing that, if you keep on doing that, then you're going to take risks that are beyond your capability or beyond your comfort level, and you'll end up making really bad decisions. So it's important, much like you and Sherry when you came in, we figured out where you were, not where your neighbors were,
right?
Where you were. And we made decisions based upon what you liked, not what I like, what you like. And people need to start doing that more and more.
Well, I think of two examples that I've encountered in the past. Like number one is just anybody who's watched Shark Tank. You have this person there who's pitching their company to somebody who's, if they affiliate with them, probably going to make their company worth millions. And they're haggling with the person who's going to make them millions from a company that's barely existing. They're haggling over 1% or 2% equity in order to partner with them. And I'm thinking, your company's not going to be worth much if you don't do this deal and you're haggling over a small amount of money. The other thing is I had an athletic director tell me years ago when he was building a new building for his basketball arena, he said, the ideal size of an arena is one where everybody who wants to be in there is in there. Then everybody thinks they have a great seat. They're glad to be in the building. But if you have 1,000 empty seats, the people who are in the top are mad because I should have a better seat because there are seats available. If all the seats are taken, everybody's happy, but the envy enters into it and the comparison enters into it. And that's something that I think we can get into in the second half of the show today. But as you view our financial situation right now and where we are with our economy, like people are they panicking? Are they patient? What's the viewpoint that you get from the clients that you talk to?
In general, throughout history, and I've been through a lot of these, you know, I unfortunately started in this business in the late 90s. So, you know, right out of college, I get kicked in the teeth with 2001, 2002, and then I get to experience in one decade, 2008, 2009. And now it's you know, it's interesting. In my mid 40s, I'm kind of the old guy in the office, which is weird. But I think ultimately, where do I see the economy going? I think it's going to be a bumpy road. And if you don't know how to, you know, kind of handle this stuff, you're going to be in a difficult spot. So I think you need to have a lot of credence. You got to look throughout history, make sure you make appropriate decisions, because I've seen it before. And, you know, not everybody has. There's a lot of advisors now that are in their mid-30s that have never seen one. It's crazy to me to think that, but it's true.
Yeah. And the good thing about it, though, that I would say to investors is, as I learned when I sat with Josh and his team, is to find out that there are options out there that make sense. It's not all gloom and doom. Set up that free consultation, 614-917-1040, aptuswealth.com. There's an answer. There's a plan. There's a way to get through this, but it's not to panic, and it's not to just throw darts at a dartboard. Aptus Wealth Management, 614-917-1040, Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. You're listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. I'm Bruce Hooley, and we're glad to be with you today and to help you work toward a retirement that is, well, peace of mind, I would say, is the key that you want as you work toward retirement. That's what they specialize in at Aptus Wealth Management. You can set up a free consultation with the Aptus team at 614-917-1040, or you can set it up online at aptuswealth.com. Josh Pick and the Aptus team also give you the opportunity to digest the information that we present in smaller doses via their YouTube channel. They've made it very easy for you to subscribe to their channel by posting a link on their website at aptuswealth.com. Subscribe. You'll be notified whenever a new video is posted. They've posted one on the buffered strategy of investing, which we'll go over a little bit briefly here today, and they'll post a new video every week. So, Josh, we were talking about retirement, working toward retirement, and the fact that a lot of people haven't really prepared very well for retirement, according to that Forbes article you said.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of articles on this, and all these articles point to one thing. This is going to come to a complete shock to you, and that is that people don't always necessarily tell the truth.
Yeah.
believe it or not, people's Instagram stories aren't necessarily an accurate representation of their daily lives.
Their Facebook page either.
Yeah.
How about
so
that?
So perception is not always reality, and we find ourselves comparing ourselves to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And here's, according to GoBankingRates.com, and the article was, how do you compare to the average Americans in regards to retirement savings? Apparently, according to this, a third of Americans have less than $10,000 saved, period. Another 27% of Americans, it's actually 36%, they're just using it as a third. So 36% have less than 10,000, not far behind them. 27% of Americans have between 10 and 50,000. And then 15% have between 50 and 100,000. 9% have over 100 to 200. And then, believe it or not, I'm just going to skip ahead. Only about 5% of Americans have over $500,000. So I think oftentimes we find ourselves comparing ourselves to other people who all have millions. And the reality is, they probably don't. Now, I'm not saying depending upon where you live, you know, if you live in Wedgwood, if you live in, mm-hmm. you know, Mirfield, if you live, you know, in areas of Powell, you probably know a lot of people that have that. But we're talking about across the country here. And the reason I bring this up is not because I'm trying to say feel good that you haven't saved enough. The reason I bring it up is oftentimes when people come to my office, they say, you know, I know I'm probably not even worth it to your office, or I know I don't have anything. And sometimes the number is quite significant.
Mm-hmm.
People will come in with $900,000 and go, I know that, you know, we really don't have that much money. Well, one, it's all relative to how much you need, right?
Sure.
That might be way more than you need, or it might not be enough. You might be right. But the moral of the story is, I think we oftentimes compare ourselves to other people in the way of earnings, in the way of how much we've saved. And if you live in Ohio and you're a family making over $500,000 a year, you're in the top 1% in the state of Ohio. So if you're hearing that everybody you know makes over $500,000 a year, there's a 99% chance they're lying. So don't feel bad about yourself. Improve your situation. Come in and get the same advice that somebody that have, we have clients that have, you know, $7-8 million, right? Get the same advice that they get and improve your situation so that hopefully one year you're in that position rather than making mistakes along the way because you feel like you're not worth it.
I'm surprised by those numbers that 36% of the people have less than $10,000 saved. Half of America has less than $50,000 saved for retirement.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, but I can point to why I think the issue is. And unfortunately, in general, and I'm not pointing any fingers, we lack a little bit of discipline.
Mm.
And we were able to survive with that lack of discipline for some period of time because if we rewind the clock back 30 years ago, 9 out of 10 people had a pension. So I'd be willing to bet, and I have no, you know, data to support this, but I'd be willing to bet that most Americans back then probably had a similar level of savings, but they could get away with it because their lives and their incomes were needs were met mm-hmm. with this pension and Social Security. Well, fast forward to today, and only 1 out of 10 people have a pension, but we did not necessarily adjust our savings to accommodate for the lack of a pension. So it doesn't surprise me, but it does point to the severity of the situation. And then we start looking at, you know, the Social Security situation. And sometime in the 2030s, 2032, 2034, somewhere in there, Social Security's trust fund is going to run out of money. So the virility of the U.S. Social Security system and how that's going to be impacted is also now on the chopping block, or at least subject to change. So now we have the fear of, I lost one source of income that I used to be able to count on, and now the other one is at least a little bit up for grabs as to how it's going to play, but we haven't adjusted how much we're saving. Because you know what? I mean, Apple phones are a lot more fun than savings, right? So I think that this is going to have to shift. And ultimately, I'm a little concerned as to how the government's going to handle it, because we're not changing our behaviors and the situation's getting worse with the economy. So, you know, don't fall into that category of being the have-nots and struggling. Make sure you're making the appropriate decisions. And another thing that I get all the time is, okay, sounds great. I want to put myself on the road to a good position, but I simply can't save that much. And people come up with this unreasonable expectation of how much they should save. Well, if I can't save $1,000 a month, there's no point in even saving anything because I'm not moving the needle. I assure you, any movement is good movement. $10 a month, $20 a month. And I have a lot of, you know, I work with a lot of kids of my clients. Mm-hmm. And when they graduate, I assure you, their number one thing is getting a new car and getting a nicer apartment and not investing every single month. But we get them started. $50 a month, $25 a month, do something. It is much easier to shift up, ratchet up year over year. Go from 50 to 55, 55 to 60. Oh, you got a bonus? Cool. What was your bonus? It's $2,000. Okay. You spend half of it. Let's save half of it. And you get on that road to discipline and you'll end up far better off. But the same thing is true at all ages. So my point here is make a difference. You can make an adjustment. Call immediately. Let's get started. The best time to start is today. People ask me that all the time. Well, should I wait until after the November elections? No. Start today.
No, I think that's very true. And I love the point you make about ingraining that discipline. Get into the habit. It's always easy to tweak the habit, but establish the habit first. And I'm wondering if we're looking at these numbers where 63%, 36% people have less than $10,000 saved for retirement. 27% of the people have between $10,000 and $50,000 saved for retirement. That's 63% of Americans have less than $50,000 saved for retirement. As it concerns the discipline of savings, having a pension, which you talked about was the case in years gone by, having a pension was sort of having discipline without having to have discipline. You worked and you got a retirement. But you didn't have any say in it. Like, you didn't have the option, I don't think, to like say, no pension. I want an extra $15 in my check every week. So maybe we've arrived at this era where we have a reflection of a lack of savings discipline, because that was done for us under the old sort of normal that people would go to work for a company, work for a company for 40 years, retirement, boom, there's your pension.
Yeah, they're trying to change that. So a lot of the regulations and rules that have been passed over the last couple of years have kind of pointed in that direction, but these are very subtle moves. So over the next couple of years, I believe, and I could be off with my statistics here, but I believe somewhere around 30% of all 401k plans are going to have an auto enrollment feature. So if you work for a company that has a 401k plan that has a 5% match, you will be auto enrolled up to a certain percentage, probably in that instance, 5%. Again, I don't know the exact percentages, but that concept of auto enrollment. But it still leaves the option for people to unenroll. Mm. So, you know, I mean, I was 22 once too, and we don't always make the best decisions. I think I've heard somewhere that our brains aren't even fully formed until we're like 26. So we're not making the best decisions, which does beg the question why we loan people an unreasonable amount of money for college when they're 18 to 22. But nevertheless, you know, that unenroll provision is still there. I would like to see a couple of things, and this might not be, you know, mainstream and in the, you know, I might not be in the majority here, but I would like to see two things. One, the auto enrollment be required up to a certain percentage. It doesn't have to be a crazy percentage, maybe 3%, 5%, something. Two, give people options inside of 401ks that are more guaranteed, that resemble something that looks like a pension. So give me the option to just say, I'm going to earn 4 or 5% over the rest of my life. And then at that point, I can annuitize it and turn it into a pension just like I could before. Because when I was growing up, I don't know about you, but I grew up in Pittsburgh, blue collar town. Mm-hmm. People worked, all my friends' parents all worked for basically unions, right?
Sure.
And everybody else that wasn't in the union always said, boy, well, he's got it really good, or she's got it really good because she's got a pension, because she's in the union. And now having a pension or thinking about using a fixed annuity on a guaranteed basis to annuitize almost sounds like you're uneducated and stupid. It's funny how when you call it an annuity, you're stupid. Hmm. When you call it a pension, you're brilliant.
Hmm.
Well, what is an annuity? It's a private pension. So all the fears that you have about the company going out of business or robbing the endowment fund or all the things that we've heard, you know, when you think about like, you know, the Ohio Valley, for example, and some of the challenges that they've had with all the mills in Pittsburgh and, mm-hmm. you know, people losing their pension amounts, you can solve all those problems by creating one for yourself. But people don't want to do it because they feel like they're not sophisticated. They're not, and I'm not suggesting you shouldn't have the money in the stock market. All I'm suggesting is that there should be a blend of multiple sources of income. You know, we talk oftentimes about a three-legged stool. You know, without three legs, the stool falls over.
Sure.
So Social Security is one leg on the stool. Your 401k and the stock market returns are one leg on the stool. What's the other leg? It could be real estate investments. It could be a lot of different things. But one of those things could be I created a private pension for myself. And if you think I'm just making this up, that's what I did for myself. So it is not an uneducated decision. It is a conscientious decision that I want to have some stability as well as this upside potential.
Wow, I never would have thought setting up your own pension, but I would highly recommend you let Aptus do that for you because they know how to do these kinds of things. I know from personal experience because my wife and I sat for the free consultation and now we're clients of Aptus Wealth Management. You can take that same journey, 614-917-1040, or do it online at Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. I was curious when we sat, we didn't really talk about this, but you know, I've had several different jobs, probably five or six different jobs. Media is a business where you change jobs all the time. And so I've had retirements and a pension here, a 401k here, a 401k here with match, IRAs here, this, that, and the other. Is there a right answer to, are you better off to have your retirement in a bunch of different pockets? I know you want to be diversified, but if you have them in a lot of different things, should you consolidate them as you go? Because a lot of times, like the one place that I worked that had a pension, they don't offer that pension anymore. And I always get the feeling when I get the updates every year that they'd like me to do something with it to get it off their books. So how do you view that as an investment advisor when people have a lot of different pockets where they have retirement?
There's pros and cons. Now, obviously, there's different levels to this. I've had people come in that have 30 different accounts at 30 different locations. And just the sheer volume of keeping track of all that mm-hmm. seems unreasonable to me. But there are certain advantages to aggregating it together. I'll give you an example. For whatever reason, the powers that be in the IRS came up with this, so don't blame me. But if you have 10 IRAs and you reach that point in your life where you're 72 and you have to take minimum required distributions, you can add up all your 10 IRAs and then decide minimum required distributions at that point in your life where you have to take a certain amount of money, by the way. You can decide where you want to take that. So I want to take it from this IRA rate here. And there might be very logical reasons why you want to do that. It's my lowest returning investment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fixed account earning 3. Everything else is earning 8. So I'm going to do it from there. Okay, cool. But if you have all these different IRAs, they do not aggregate. They do not combine together. So you have to take the right amount from each individual one. And most 401ks will not allow you to pick which fund you take it from. So you might say, well, I have a stock fund and a bond fund. And as I'm looking at it today, my stocks are down more than my bonds. And I have to take money, so I'd rather take it from the bonds, right? Makes sense. You might not have the option to do that. So in that respect, it makes a lot of sense to combine it together. In other respects, however, there are certain 401ks that might have crazy options available. I have a client, for example, that has a 401k at Nationwide. They worked for Nationwide a really long time ago. And Nationwide used to have this crazy fixed account inside of their 401k. I don't know that it exists anymore. I don't see it anymore. But if you were there a really long time ago, you're kind of grandfathered in. Well, think back to the low interest rates of the last, until very recently here. You'd be lucky to go to a bank and get a 1% rate of return.
Sure.
She was guaranteed at 3.5% or 4%. So why would you get rid of that? That is a checking account earning 4%. So you mm-hmm. keep that. So the point here is you got to really do some analysis across the board. But I do want to dispel one myth. And it's something that you kind of said, and I know we've talked enough. I know you were just saying it kind of in jest, but diversification is important. But just because your money's spread around a bunch of different places doesn't mean you're diversified.
Right. No, you're not. That's right.
I mean, you could have the S&P 500 Vanguard fund in every single 401k that you have and have 40 of them. It doesn't mean you're safer than if you had it all in one. What's more important is where you're diversified. And there is some secret sauce there. And that doesn't matter whether you're spread out or you're consolidated. Now, just for ease of life, myself included, I want to have as few accounts as I can possibly have and still achieve the same objective.
Right? Yeah. And still be balanced and all those things. Absolutely right. You know, we're in early October here, and we've got a couple important things coming up. Number one, we're going to get the September inflation number at some point in time. And why that's important is it will play into the cost of living increase for Social Security. Apparently, in my research at least, it shows me that they calculate the cost of living increase based upon the July, August, and September inflation numbers. They've been pretty high here recently. They are projecting that the cost of living increase will be over 8%. I'll just say it that way because I don't want people to get their hopes up. But that, if it's, let's say it's around 8.5%, that could add up to somewhere in the neighborhood of, again, in generalities, of Social Security going up, your monthly check. If you're getting an average check of $1,650 a month, it'll go up to $1,800, so another $150. So that's important coming up. So there again, inflation's high. That's bad, but you know there's some good with it in that you get a cost of living increase. As it concerns your clients and Social Security, how significant is that cost of living increase?
I think it's critical not only for my clients, it's critical for everybody in the country. We know some stats, and that is that about half of Americans in the country get more than half of their income from Social Security. So that increase amongst times like these of inflation is not only welcome, it's darn near necessary for many of them. Now, anybody who's listening that's collecting Social Security is probably immediately doing what every client I've ever had says, and they go, yeah, but they're just going to raise the cost of Medicare commensurate with that, and it's going to be a wash, so thanks, but no thanks. Well, my one hope out of all of this, and I know it's easy to pile on to the administration and say they're doing everything wrong because, quite frankly, they haven't done a lot right here as of late, so it's easy to make that assumption, but one thing that they did do, and we'll see if it actually plays out, is if you recall back, one of the caveats to this new spending bill was we're going to allow Medicare to negotiate prices of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So that theoretically should allow Medicare costs to not increase at the same rate or in excess of the normal rate of inflation. So knowing that most people in America spend about $170 a month on Medicare, Part A, that is, or Part A and B, A is free, B costs about $170 a month for most. If that only goes up by 8 or 10%, well, that's only $17, right, or less. Mm-hmm. So you should get a significant increase unless there is some, you know, backdoor nonsensical actions here that they're trying to, you know, pay no attention to being behind the curtain. But I think if they do that, there's already, I think we would both agree, and I know that you have another show that's much more politically involved than this one, I think we would both agree that there's already quite a bit of feeling that the government is not moving with our best interests at heart.
Yeah.
And if they do that, that belief system is going to deepen. And I don't think it's a good thing. So my hope is that they've backed themselves into a corner and we all get a great raise that we're collecting.
Yeah. And the bad news on the raise is that, you know, you're paying high prices this calendar year. Your gas is what your gas is this week. You don't get your cost of living raise until next month, till next year, rather. What you hope is that as inflation comes down, let's say ideally it comes down in the latter half of 2023, you're still getting the same cost of living increase because they only change that every year. So it's a catch-up thing. You probably, hopefully, in the best scenario, it's to your detriment on the front end, but to your benefit on the back end. And the thing that I've learned from sitting with you, Josh, and the Aptus team is that there are ways to manage risk, mitigate the risk that is going on that's inherent in all this inflation. And one of those ways that we've chatted about here, and I wanted to bring it up today because people can buy I-bonds and get a rate of return of what I read was 9.62%, but they have to buy an I-bond by the end of October. There are some nuances to buying I-bonds. Why don't you educate the people on that in case they're interested in?
So obviously, I encourage everybody to go check out treasurydirect.gov. That is the website, treasurydirect.gov. That's where you have to go and buy I-bonds. So I can't help you with this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a governmental program. And you can read all the finer points right on there. It's pretty self-explanatory. But let's cover the high points. So first thing is you can only do $10,000 per person per year. So, you know, if you're looking at how do I come up with a solution on a fixed side of things, guaranteed side of things to park $200,000. This isn't going to move the needle for a lot. But for the rest of you who are saying, you know, I have this $10,000 worth of savings, I'd really like to keep up with inflation, not let it erode. It could be a perfect scenario. I-bonds are actually designed to be 30-year bonds, just like the old, remember the old, you know,
savings bonds,
sure. E-bonds, now they're I-bonds. I bonds are linked to inflation, hence I bond, right? And that rate is declared periodically. I believe it's 2 or 4 times a year. So when you're seeing that cutoff for October, they're going to declare the new rate. But get in by October and that's your rate. That's your rate for the 12-month period. Now, the problem with them is if you don't hold them for 5 years, you have to hold them for one. So you're going to have to play for at least 1 year. But if you don't hold them for 5 years, then when you liquidate them, you lose 3 months worth of interest. Now, you could say, oh, that stinks. But still, if you're getting 9% in interest or 10% roughly in interest, and you're only losing 2.5% in interest, right? For the, it's still 7.5 guaranteed for 1 year. There's nothing, there's no game in town that's going to guarantee that level of rate for 1 year with that level of liquidity backed by the full faith and credit of the federal government. So it's a great option. It just unfortunately doesn't move the needle a whole lot if you're looking to park a whole bunch of money.
Aptus Wealth Management, 614-917-1040, aptuswealth.com. My wife and I have sat with you guys, and we have decided to undertake what we've talked about here on the show, that buffered strategy. And that is detailed in one of the latest YouTube videos that people can link to through your site, Aptus Wealth Management. People can subscribe to your YouTube channel by going to your site and clicking through and then subscribing. Let's go over buffered strategy, why it makes sense for some people, why it might be something that, I don't know, does it make more sense now in this era of volatility than maybe it made sense back when the market was roaring and there was little worry about a crash?
Yeah, well first, you know, this is for a piece. So I think it's important to note that in your scenario, and we're not going to share your whole scenario, but in your scenario, we did it with a piece of the puzzle, and it can be a good piece of the puzzle. But the reason why I think we'll really resonate with a lot of people. The story that I hear repetitiously is, I understand that this market animal that we're describing, it goes up and it goes down, and that's great. And I know over 20 years from now, I'm going to be very happy that I stayed there, but I simply cannot. I am being honest with myself, and I cannot tolerate, we're already down 20 plus percent. If it goes down another 20, I'm going to jump out of building. Yeah. I can't do it. But at the same time, I know that just going to cash, well, that's a guaranteed loss of inflation. I mean, I'm kind of darned if I do, darned if I don't. What do I do? So here's one strategy that is unique. You can get them as structured notes. You can get them as short-term annuities. There's a bunch of different ways. You can get them through insurance companies, through investment banks. Moral of the story is always the same, and it's a buffered strategy. In this particular strategy that we're going to talk about today, you limit yourself on the downside to only a return and a negative return in excess of 20%. So what does that mean? We're already down 20-some-odd percent. You get one today, and now you have an October 7th buffered strategy investment. We look at the S&P 500 365 days from now on October 7th, and we say, where is it at? Well, the S&P 500 is down 15%. Well, then you get a zero because you're insulated against the first 20% drop. If it goes down beyond that, instead of 15, it goes down 25. Well, you lost 5. Sorry. What is the advantage of that, by the way? So you're locked in for 1 year. The market goes down 25. We're already down 23, 25 something. I don't know where we're at as we speak today. The market's down roughly 50 at that point. Well, at that point, we say buffer be darned. We're going back into the market because we're going to ride this train back up through the ceiling. We don't want to cap our upside because in exchange for this downside buffer, we are capping our upside. And in this particular strategy, as of today, obviously call our office for rates, it's capped at 13. So what did you do? You said, if the market goes up 10% from today in 1 year, I make 10. If it goes up 15, I make 13. I can never make more than 13. But if it goes down 20, I didn't lose anything. If that's what it takes to keep you in and buy you options, that is far better than doing nothing at all. And I think it also leaves you with a bunch of options on how to take advantage of perhaps a really bad scenario if the market declines more and hopping back in and making a lot of money on the upside. So it's a great strategy for a piece of your money.
Yeah, and it's not something that fits everyone. That's what I loved about sitting with Josh and the Aptus team is that, you know, it wasn't like a one-size-fits-all strategy. And I think you'll get the personal attention, you'll get the education, you'll get the peace of mind. I highly recommend it. It's very painless, and it's easy, and it's free. 614-917-1040, aptuswealth.com. Set it up. aptuswealth.com. Use the YouTube channel link on the site. And it's always great to see you, Josh. Thanks for being in here. We'll talk to you again Monday on Money Monday on The Answer at 12:30 p.m. And hope you have a great weekend.
You as well. Thanks, Bruce.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.